Next, I'm pleased to introduce John McGee from RENCI. I guess you heard a little bit this morning of what RENCI stands for, and he'll be sharing some interesting research that his organization is engaged with on behalf of distributed scientific communities. So these are scientists working in places around the world and, again, trying to reduce the learning curve associated with being effective in these settings. Welcome.
Thank you, Susan, and thank you for the opportunity to tell you about our project. So as you see, there's lots of logos on here. Virtual organizations are a fact of life, and it's not always clear which hat anybody is wearing at any particular time, so we're all wearing all of our hats. And the one that I'd like to call your attention to is the EIE for CI. This is our Embedded Immersive Engagement Program for Cyber Infrastructure, and what we've learned is that to take a scientist that is not extremely technical or extremely versed in computational science that has a real need. They've got a paper they want to get out. They've got a class, a curriculum that they're trying to build. They do not have the time to get a computer science degree. And the question is, how do we rapidly get them up and running on a large computational infrastructure and impart some knowledge and give them enough knowledge so that they can do the work that they want to do but not force them down the path to being computer scientists, allowing them to go to the depth that they're comfortable with and working on their own time frame. So this is happening all within in the context of the Open Science Grid, which is a project that's only been around for a little bit of time, but it's an evolution of a group of projects from years past, going on 10 years. And the Open Science Grid is the computational infrastructure that the United States is contributing to managing the influx of data that's going to come off of the Large Hadron Collider, which you've probably heard about in the popular media recently. They've just started spinning up this device. It's going to produce enormous amounts of data, and the whole world has gotten together to figure out how to share compute resources to distribute this data and make it available to physicists all around the world. This is the kind of instrument that you get one per planet, not one per lab, not one per country. You get one per planet of these things. So this cast of characters have been involved in this for about 10 years. And who are we? The Open Science Grid is a consortium of universities, national laboratories, primarily the physics labs, Fermilab, and Brookhaven National Lab. But we're making we're getting to work with other government labs as well, including the National Renewable Energy Lab out in Golden, Colorado. Also scientific collaborations and the classic NSF and large sponsored grid projects and alliances. So the vision of the Open Science Grid is to transform compute and data-intensive science through this cross-domain, self-managed, national distributed .. And I think the key word here is self-managed. The Open Science Grid is very much a virtual organization, and that layers over top of a lot of these important groups. And the thing about it is that those who show up to the table and those who participate and put out effort are the ones who affect where this organization goes. It's very much like an open source project, but many, many layers higher up on the stack than that. And the way that that vision is achieved is by creating this framework for large-scale distributed sharing of resources. If you own a computer, what's it going to take to convince you to share it with other people? There are times when you are working on publishing a paper, and you need 1,500, 1,000 times the capacity of your one computer. There are other times where you don't need any of it at all because you're off on vacation, you're busy analyzing your results, you're busy teaching a class. And the NSF has funded lots and lots of compute clusters for individual principal investigators over the years. And the question is, how do we harness that? How do we take advantage of that? And then backfill any idle cycles in the very large compute centers that are funded around the country. So by addressing the technology, the policy, and the social requirements that are needed to allow people to feel comfortable sharing their resources and taking advantage of other resources that other people are sharing, that is the framework that's being created here. And the technology, it's not easy, but it's not rocket science. But we find that the policy and the social issues are the more difficult ones. So who is using the Open Science Grid today? A large number of domains. I've got a list here. The other thing is I'm going to go through these slides really fast. I've got way too much information, but I may not even talk to some, but I wanted you to have them on the wiki page for reference, and you've got my email address in there as well. So lots of domains using the Open Science Grid, even though it was created by the Department of Energy and National Science Foundation specifically for high-energy physics. My role, as funded by NSF OCI, is exclusively to help bring the power of this infrastructure to any scientist outside of high energy physics. Although we have been known to help one or two, we won't tell anybody. So the Open Science Grid really trades in this fundamental unit of a virtual organization, a group of like-minded individuals that come together. And not in terms of individuals. An individual PI doesn't really come. We have a few holding containers, and our container is exactly one of those to handle individual researchers coming in. But over time, they gravitate to a virtual organization, a group, a community of people that they associate with. Here we see a list of the different virtual organizations as of Feb 2007. Again, that's more for reference. So the OSG, what does it and what does it not provide? The OSG project does not own a single computer. It doesn't have any computers. It doesn't own any of the middleware software that makes it all work. It doesn't provide funds for any of these particular virtual organizations, and it doesn't have a one-size-fits-all sort of mantra. What it does do is it helps sites that want to contribute resources join the OSG facility. And as those sites join the OSG facility, they may have unique requirements, and we work with those sites, and we evolve the infrastructure to be able to include these new requirements. It helps us evolve. We help virtual organizations join in, groups of like-minded scientists. We define interfaces, standards that people can use, which are absolutely required for software interoperability in such a large distributed heterogeneous system. Also maintain and integrate a software stack. So there's a set of 30, 40 different open source software pieces that are all put together and built on lots of different platforms and tested on a routine basis to make sure they work, so that if you're going to join your computer to the Open Science Grid, you don't have to go through all that hassle to do that. So you've got an organization that you can rely on that has put a quality assurance on us on this very deep layer of open source software that makes it run. So what is driving us? This is the Cyber Infrastructure Vision for the 21st Century Discovery, for a seminal document for the National Science Foundation. And up in green, many of these slides are the ones that I present to universities when I go out and try and convince them to join their resources into OSG and convince researchers that they want to actually use this thing. So underlined in green, we see that NSF is going to invest in leadership class half to 10 petascale performance range systems. Very expensive, $200 million computer out of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Not every university is going to get one of those. Not every researcher is going to have access to that. On a much broader scale, in terms of availability to a much larger audience, NSF's also going to promote the resource sharing between and among academic institutions to optimize accessibility, HPC assets that have been deployed broadly. And that's where the Open Science Grid comes in, being able to harness these things and tie them together and provide that national cyber infrastructure. So why should your university or your government lab care about resource sharing or drive resource sharing? And we like to think that it's just the right thing to do. It's not unlike producing a piece of open source software and putting it out there. It enables these new modes of collaboration. It democratizes large-scale computational science. And if you can share resources across your chemistry department and your geology department at a university, chances are sharing it with a physicist at CERN is not going to be too hard, because all of those issues are the same. It's not just somebody in your lab. Once you've crossed a certain boundary, crossing the next boundary is not too difficult. Always gotchas, always little issues. Well, we can't have somebody outside the United States because of the policies by which this machine was created. But overall, this is very doable, and we can make this work. So what is the mission of my team? We have two fundamental primary missions. The first is to help university campuses or government labs organize their local cyber infrastructure, sharing resources, developing a campus-wide grid infrastructure within the university or lab, and then ultimately, ideally, connecting that back into the Open Science Grid. The second mission we have is to help those non-high-energy physicists adapt their models, adapt their codes, and train them to be able to use this infrastructure for their large-scale computational science. That's the two reasons for my existence in this project. So there's lots of issues. OSG is a very large and complicated thing with many moving parts. That's just simply what it takes. If you want to build an international infrastructure that can handle the processing of data that's generated 80 gigabits per second off of the Large Hadron Collider and make it available to thousands of physicists worldwide, it's not an easy thing. And it's not something that your average biochemist who has spent many years deep in the biology is going to walk up to and kick the tires on it and give it a try. And OSG needs to appear as a very unified, coordinated message, and this is our response to within the OSG, to provide that interface into all the many different moving parts of the open science grid as needed until they hit a certain plateau. At some point, as we work with these scientists, they're getting so much value from the system that they don't require as much hand-holding, and they'll figure out their own way. But if it's very daunting at first glance and they can't see the immediate value coming by, then you'll lose them. So our engagement process, we have two teams, one at RENC and one at Clemson, and we both work on both sides. But we embed our experts into the research team or into the campus IT department, sometimes remotely through through a voice call and a web desktop sharing application, sometimes physically. You know, it depends on the situation. It depends on the priorities of the people we're working with. And that's probably the most important aspect of what's made us successful is the ability to adapt to the specific needs of the people we're working with. If they're on a slow process, that's fine. We're busy with other people. If they need somebody to take care of something right away that's going to lead to a publication, then we'll very seriously consider flying out and making something happen. But ultimately, we build trusting relationships, and what happens is we find a viral type of scenario. After we get success for one or two researchers, we often find three and four more of their colleagues coming knocking on our door, which is just great for us. It takes time. It can take anywhere from, in a best-case scenario, 6 months to sometimes 18 or 24 months to have a real success story with a research team. So, and looking at those campus grid infrastructures, we do have a couple of success stories. Not going to go into too many of the details here, but Clemson University was very rapidly able to tie together a lot of machines across their campus and provide on order of a half a million CPU hours a month to their local users. Same thing happened at Purdue University, and they took it a lot farther than that. They actually provide some of their high-throughput computing resources out to the TerraGrid as an allocatable resource, providing an order of 5.5 million CPU hours through these types of mechanisms. And one of the first campus grids, one of these that kicked it off, was at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where the PI for the Open Science Grid resides. And he was able to tie together these six different departments across campus. And these are diverse users with different deadlines. And this is another case where diversity is great. Because they have different deadlines, it makes that whole sharing thing work, where not everybody needs the entire system at the same time. And that really was the proving grounds and the development environment for where a lot of these concepts were created. And so users typically submit these jobs to their own local home department, and those jobs will preferentially match to their own local resources. And when they run out of local resources, they'll start spilling out to some of these others. And it all happens kind of behind the scenes. And it introduces some interesting technical challenges, and that's where we come in. For a researcher that's used to logging into a cluster and using the sort of job submission mechanisms for that specific cluster, we have to do some work to adapt it so that it'll play well out in the wild. And that's the work that we do and hand back to them, and then they get to crack it open and take a look at it and see how we did it and then begin to tweak it and modify it and call us for help. So here we see that diversity working out again. This is somewhat old data from 2007, but each one of these lines shows the CPU usage by every different VO. This is not any individual user. These are all the users in a particular virtual organization, like the biology group or the Atlas experiment, et cetera. And you can see how they're the peaks and valleys is what I call it. And this is, again, what makes this system really, really powerful. So the science areas that we have been active with, my group is actively working with scientists in every one of these science areas, from video processing to energy research and biochemistry and biology. Some of our heaviest users are in biochemistry. Those protein folding folks are very adept at consuming CPU cycles. But it's interesting because they'll do simulations for a million CPU hours and then go into the wet lab and create 10 proteins and find one that was very much worth creating. And in fact, Brian Coleman at the University of North Carolina is one of the people we've been working with. We see some of his usage patterns of his graduate students dumping 10, 15,000 compute jobs at a time onto the system. Each one will run anywhere from 4 to 8 hours, and the system just farms it out all over the country, and results come back. This is one in the earth sciences where using a model, the WRF weather model, weather research forecasting model, which is traditionally not a good class of computational thing to do on a grid because it requires a very tightly coupled node computations. It's an MPI type application where individual processes need to talk to each other a lot. However, Dr. Etherton was working on the underlying physics model of one of the particular modules, and what he needed to do was run 32 node jobs. So it only required 32 nodes at a time, but he needed to run 16 of them every single day for 2 weeks and compare that to what actually happened with the weather pattern to validate whether or not his physics model was doing the right thing. And because of this, we were able to really push the limits on the open science grid, and that led to a document that we created, which is evolving the infrastructure further so that we can support these types of ensembles of high-performance computing-type applications. Another example there with coastal modeling. And this is another good one, information library science, natural language processing. This professor is exploring the connections in academic literature, the evolution of scientific claims within academic literature. It's something that is just incredibly easy to adapt to the open science grid. And we were able to take something that was running on her local systems on the order of 3 to 4 weeks and have it turn around in less than a day. 162,000 documents, spread them all out over this thing, and it all comes right back. And it enabled her to do some things that she just simply wouldn't have been able to have done otherwise. And this is my sales pitch to campuses and universities. You know, there's a lot of moving parts. You know, you've got campus IT and enterprise systems, you have research computing groups and computer science departments and lab departments, and then you've got these national systems like the Open Science Grid and the Terra Grid. How do we thread the needle through all these different departments and projects and people and virtual organizations and do something really powerful for science and education? And, you know, it's my belief that if we begin to truly integrate these systems, integrate into campus-level identity management so researchers are at their desk using their home credentials, and then running jobs that start off in their local systems and expand up to research computing and then start spilling out into the national cyber infrastructure, and that there are no idle compute cycles left in the data centers, that we can